Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Yo.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Want to start?
Yeah, just send the Twitter questions out.
Okay, cool.
Okay, we'll just talk about the games.
Yep.
All right. Wait, maybe should you try and call in? You sound like much clearer, I think, when you're on your cell phone.
Let me try that again.
I don't know if it'll work. If it doesn't, we can just switch back. Try calling, going through your cell phone, then I'll leave and I'll come back again if it doesn't work.
Let me just try. I'll just stay on the call on here and on my,
okay,
on my phone at the same time. Hello?
Hello?
Yep.
Okay, let's see. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, let's go. What's up, everyone? It's the Laws, the Jam, the podcast, coming to you as always with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing all right. Clippers won a fun game yesterday, won a fun game a few days ago, lost a frustrating game to start the season, but otherwise kind of a fun start to the year. What's your quick take on how the Clippers look these few games in?
I think all things considered, they look pretty good. I think, you know, the guys, they really need to play well, with one or two exceptions, have been playing pretty well. I think, you know, it's three games and they haven't had any injuries, which compared to last year is, you know, huge progress. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think just the play of the really their two or three most important players has been really good. There are definitely some worries on the peripheries. You know, they could just as easily be 1-2 or even 0-3 as they could 3-0. They've
mm-hmm.
been really close in all their games, and it's been fun. I mean, I think they're really, I mean, like you said, they are what we thought they would be. You know, the games haven't turned out exactly like I would have predicted, but the overall results have been, you know, we said they'd go 2-1 and they went 2-1.
Yeah. So, I mean, quick takes on each of these games, really. So, what did you think about that Denver game?
On one hand, you know, they were up by, what, like 8 points with, like, 4 minutes left. They should have won that game. On the other hand, Denver looked like a better team throughout most of the game. I mean, really the only way they got back in was through Boban, which, you know, is legit because, you know, you do whatever you can to win a game. But, I mean, the Nuggets from the other games they've played are clearly a legit team. Their defense does seem to be improved this year. They have a couple guys on their team who are better than anybody on the Clippers. I wasn't, like, super upset at them losing to the Nuggets, even though it was on home, you know, at home and the Nuggets already played. Actually, no, they hadn't. No, that was their first game, too. But, I mean, I thought that that was a really bad meltdown. Honestly, it was probably one of the worst we've seen in the past couple of years. I mean, they gave up, like, a 27-5 run or something. It was brutal to watch. They just could not score. They weren't getting any stops. So that was a tough game to watch. But really, I mean, the outcome wasn't that surprising. It just happened in a very odd way. And then I think, you know, the next game against the Thunder, that was a nice win. The Thunder without Westbrook just don't have that much talent. I mean, the Thunder, even with Westbrook, I think they looked shaky in his first game back, too. You know, they're kind of the opposite of the Clippers. Like, a couple guys, they really need to play well, particularly Schroeder, have looked absolutely horrible. And they just do not look very good right now. So, I mean, that is a game they needed to win. Westbrook with a Thunder team that's kind of rickety to start the year. And then, obviously, you know, they got lucky with Chris Paul being absent from the Rockets game. But still, I mean, you have to deal with James Harden. Eric Gordon was really hot. Clint Capella played well. They, you know, the Rockets, even without Paul, are still a really good team. So that was a nice win. They were in control for a lot of that game, which was good to see. And they held on even when things started to go kind of not their way at the end of the fourth quarter, which was good to see. I mean, I think the best win was probably the Rockets win. I think the Thunder game, you know, they really should have won that game. And the Nuggets loss was frustrating, but, you know, I think it's something they can live with.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. The Nuggets, I actually saw the Nuggets game after the fact. I saw the final score, and then I watched the whole game. And I couldn't believe the Clippers were up by so much in the fourth quarter. I'm like, are they going to melt down this badly? The Nuggets were kind of just ahead of them the whole game. They were in control most of the game. And the Clippers just had this, and then they looked really good. And for a second, you thought that they would steal the game. Really, my take was that they almost stole that game, but unfortunately, they just totally melted down. And, you know, the Nuggets, after having a meltdown versus the Clippers last year, kind of gave them a little taste of their own medicine. Their wings are just come at you for days, and especially when they're healthy. It's like they just have one athletic wing after the other coming after you over and over again. And then they have Jokic, who doesn't look like he should be better than anybody, just outskill anybody that's guarding him. Obviously, Bobby is a good matchup against the Nuggets, and he played very well. He's fairly dominant. He's good against these bigs that have stone feet, just like he does. But unfortunately, it wasn't enough to get them through. And an interesting thing was that they kind of were force-feeding Gallo down the stretch and trying to make him like their go-to guy when clearly it wasn't working. And Gallinari didn't even play down the stretch, I think, against Oklahoma City, even though he was feeling it all game. It kind of goes to show just this team's, you know, anything goes, whatever lineup is working kind of mentality. Shea had a nice game against the Nuggets. Really, he had a nice game all three games. He barely showed up on the box score against the Thunder, but I still thought he had a really nice composed game, and he was dictating pretty well. The backcourt, the starting backcourt, is starting to become a bit of an issue, even though, you know, you see particularly Bradley's defense has been easy to recognize on certain star players like James Harden yesterday, who he guarded a lot of the time and even had a nice steal on Harden. But just this lack of offense and just this mismatch between Bradley and Beverly. A lot of people were excited for the idea of Clamp City. It's more like Clank City between the two of them. What do you think about the chemistry between our starting backcourt?
I mean, I think, you know, Clippers fans have really been dumping on those guys, and I'm trying to be as fair as possible. I think their defense has been really good. I think it has set a tone. You know, I don't think anybody was really expecting otherwise, but it does need to be said. You know, Bradley in particular, I think, has had some really nice moments on defense. I think he also did not play good defense against Harden. I mean, Harden's a tough matchup, but he was getting smoked by Harden. But in the other two games, I thought he played pretty good defense. Beverly was kind of the opposite. I thought his defense was, you know, pretty good in the first two games, and then he came out super fired up for the Rockets game and was kind of just all over the court. So, you know, to give them their due, I think they've played with energy. I think they've played pretty well on defense considering their limitations with size and, you know, probably some rust. But, I mean, I think offensively it's fair to say, I don't think you can really say anything other than it's been a train wreck. You know, they have not shot the ball well at all. That's honestly putting it charitably, them not shooting the ball well. And worse than that, they just aren't really able to create good looks for themselves or really for anybody else. Beverly has tried attacking the basket a few times and kind of gotten there, but he can't, just doesn't have enough burst to finish at the basket. He can't elevate over anybody, so he's been taking these kind of flat-footed layups, which are just getting blocked or wildly missing off the glass. And Bradley, you know, we all know that his patented shot when he has the ball in his hands is a mid-range pull-up. And for one thing, that's just a horrible shot for anybody except for the best mid-range shooters. And he's just not making them. So, you know, they're not really creating for anybody. They're not shooting the ball at all. And I think some of that will, you know, will revert to norms. I mean, Pat Beverly is 2 of 17 from the field, 1-11 from 3. Avery Bradley, 7 of 23 from the field, 1 of 8 from 3. I mean, those guys will shoot better, but I think there is still some concern that neither of them can break down a defense. And, you know, Beverly is a decent passer. He's not great. Bradley is not a particularly gifted passer, and just playing them together is just risky, I think, against a lot of teams. I think on some teams the defense is useful, and on against certain teams, I think the defense could even swarm opposing ball handlers, and the hope would be that they're creating enough steals and getting enough stops to get transition offense, which, you know, their half-court limitations aren't exposed as much. But if that doesn't happen, they're really struggling to get anything going in a set offense.
Yeah, as poorly as those two have played, and they've both been disappointing, particularly Patrick, Tobias Harris and Danilo Gallinari look just as dominant as we thought they could look together. They've been fantastic. Gallinari looks as spry as he ever has looked in the Clipper uniform. Tobias Harris, I don't know how good he's going to be. And is Tobias Harris better than Blake Griffin right now? Like, it's almost hard. He's not. Are you sure of it?
I mean, Blake, if you look at Blake's numbers, his first few games for the Pistons, he's been ridiculous. I don't have them in front of me, but he is doing everything for them. And they've won a couple tight games, and a lot of it's been due to him. I think in a vacuum, I absolutely still think Blake is a better player.
Yeah,
I just
want you to say that Tobias is better than Blake. I know you're not going to, and you shouldn't. Blake is still better. But I mean, I think the argument can be made that Tobias is better for this team than Blake is probably right now. Maybe. I don't know. Especially with how Gallinari likes the ball in his hands and is an underrated playmaker. Not to bring up Blake over and over again, but I love Tobias. I feel like he has an interesting ceiling. I'm not quite sure how good he could end up being because I don't think he's not in his prime just yet, but he's already, I would say he's like a borderline top 50 player right now. How good can Tobias Harris be? What's his ceiling?
Did you say top 50, 5-0?
Yeah, 50. Yeah, not 15. Please.
Oh, no, I don't think he's borderline. I think he is a top 50.
Yeah,
no,
he's
a top 50 player.
He's a top 50 player. Can he be a top 25 player in this league?
I don't think so. you know, he came into the NBA super young. I believe he was the youngest player in his draft class, but he is still 26. And, you know, I think in some aspects, guys can improve their game even into their late 20s. And some things guys can improve on even into their early 30s. Just, element. But, you know, that athleticism does start fading. And he's not a player who really relies on his athleticism. But I think he's relatively close to his peak. I think this year or maybe his next 2 years will probably be his best chance at, like, a career year. So, you know, I think he is a top 50 player. I think he's probably fringe top 40, which means he's a fringe all-star. There are 30 all-stars. He's, you know, somewhere probably on the periphery of that. If he has a really good year, he could sneak in sometime. Probably not in the Western Conference, but still. But, I mean, I think he's been really, really good. The thing that I've liked most is that he's attacked the glass super hard. Didn't happen as much against the Rockets, but he's still averaging 8 rebounds per game, which is what you want to see from a guy who's playing in generally small lineups as, like, an interchangeable forward. I think his defense has been solid. It's never going to be spectacular, but I think it's a bit better than it was last year. And he's been getting to the free throw line a lot more, which has been huge for keeping his efficiency up, because he hasn't really hit from three that well. And he's actually missed a bunch of free throws, but just the sheer volume of getting to the line has really helped keep his efficiency up. So I've really liked what I've seen from him. If he's able to keep that defense and the rebounding and the free throw attempts up and his shooting reverts a little bit, you know, regresses positively, I think he could be a top 40, top 35 player this season. You know, again, I don't think in the West he makes the all-star game, but I think he might have a season good enough that it's like all-star caliber when you look back at it in hindsight, like, oh, that's like good enough to make the all-star team. But yeah, I mean, I've been really impressed with him. The Clippers have been, you know, very forward in saying they think he's going to get better. He's the face of the franchise right now. And so far, I think he looks like it. Though, as you mentioned, Gallo has been very, very good. In some ways, he's been better than Tobias. But I think Tobias's consistency is a little bit better. But I mean, Gallo has looked fantastic as well. And the best thing is that they play with each other very well.
Yeah. Just for the record, I don't think Tobias is better than Blake. This is just me getting excited. Danilo Gallinari is looking fantastic. I mean, I think this is just him healthy. Like, I'm not particularly – it's funny. It's like I'm not particularly impressed. He's possibly been the Clippers' best player. He's had some really great stretches, particularly carrying the team. And he looks like the fringe – all-star – slash star player that we always knew he could be. He's healthy. Hopefully he can stay that way. It's always just that question about health. He's a good player. It's unfortunate how many injuries he's had to deal with, because it's undeniable that he's good. I think that he could be like a second slash third option on a really, really good team. And he's just super good. And it's unfortunate that his career has been what it is. I hope he can stay healthy this year. He looks to be in good shape. He's super spry. He's had some nice dunks already this season. So hopefully he can keep it up. I really don't have too much more to say about Gallo. What do you think about Gallo?
Yeah, I mean, I mostly agree. I mean, the Clippers paid him $20 million a year last year. And for the most part, I think people were worried about the health, and they thought maybe, you know, it was a bit of an overpay, but it generally wasn't regarded as a massive bad deal. It was like, oh, this is like a deal in the C range, like fairly paid, maybe a little bit over. There were some, you know, elements that people didn't like, but generally people thought he was roughly like an 18 to 20 million a year player. And I mean, he's played like that this year. This is the guy who they needed last year in the worst way. And I mean, if they get him like this, they're in the playoffs last year. You know, for even 50 games, not even all year, but or really just down the stretch when they desperately needed somebody who could score and pass and defend a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to say. I mean, I think he does complement Tobias very well, and I think he complements, you know, the other Clippers players in that he can do a little bit of everything, and that's what they need. It would be probably a better if he was a little bit better at creating his own shot. But honestly, he can get those little jumpers because he can just shoot over the top of people. So yeah, I mean, I think he's been really good. I'd say he's probably been slightly better than Tobias. I'm not sure I expect that to last, if for nothing else than just injuries. But yeah, I mean, he's really good.
He's a really good player. You know, Lou Williams has had some kind of shooting slumps since he's been back. It's kind of interesting to see where he fits on this healthy Clipper backcourt. I think the bench has been particularly impressive, not in any, you know, Lou's been a big reason why the bench has been so good, even though he hasn't been able to hit his shots at particular proficiency. But it's kind of interesting seeing him get comfortable, especially with Shea off the bench. What is Lou's role with the second unit? Is he quite the scorer that he's always needed to be? Is he going to eventually kind of defer a little more to Shea? I know he's got used to playing with Austin Rivers, so maybe it's not going to be that huge of a difference when Shea kind of gets more comfortable in his offensive niche. But what do you think about Lou's role? How different is his role this year compared to last year?
I think it is quite a bit different. I think he still plays a super valuable role in this team. I think when you look at the offenses of the last two games the Clippers have played in crunch time compared to the first one, even though the Rockets game was a bunch of Lou just chucking, like they were still getting decent shots up. So the Nuggets game was just a complete fiasco on the offensive end. So I think he's still, just in terms of creating shots, he's still the best shot creator on the Clippers. And I think he's going to be that guy who maybe his role throughout the rest of the game won't be as big this year, but I think the Clippers are still going to rely on him heavily down the stretch of games because he just creates his shot better than anybody else. He does have limitations. He's not the biggest guy. Small, like bigger and more physical players can shut him down a little bit, but he can get free against almost anybody. He can get like at least a semi-decent shot against most defenders, and that's invaluable, especially when guys like Gallinari and Harris, they're very good. They're better overall players than Lou, but they're not as nifty ball handlers or just clever as getting themselves open as Lou is. So I think he's still going to play a pretty big role, though I will say that there were times against the Rockets where he was bringing the ball up the court, and I was just like, just give the ball to Shea. You know, I think when those two guys are playing together, especially if it's not the fourth quarter, though, in some cases, maybe even if it is, if Shea is good enough, I think Shea should be the one running the offense. I think Lou should be playing off the ball. Like, obviously, he'll do some ball handling. They'll get him in secondary pick and roll action. You know, he'll be able to attack off closeouts and stuff. But he's just not an intuitive passer playmaker that Shea is. I mean, Shea is a point guard. Lou Williams is a pretty good passer. He's an underrated passer, but he does not think pass first most of the time. And, I mean, I think he's really struggled shooting. I don't expect that to continue. I do think part of it is just figuring out his role with Shea and with all these other new players. Like, he hasn't played with Luke before. He hasn't played with Mike Scott before. The only guy who's played with before are Boban and Harrell, really, that he's played a lot with. And it showed because he's connected with them really well. And the rest of the guys, you know, it's going to be a learning experience. So I do think he's going to have to adjust. He's not going to play nearly as many minutes this year as he did last year. He's not going to get as many shots, but he's still getting plenty of shots. They just aren't falling. I think he could still be put up, you know, six man of the year numbers. I think 17-4 or 17-3 on very good efficiency is still possible. And I think that's six man of the year numbers. So I'm a little concerned about his fit, but I don't really expect it to be something that lasts. I think he'll be able to adjust. I think he's a smart player. I think he and Shea have already shown that even though they need to work out some kinks, they're naturally very good together. I'm not particularly worried.
And before we talk about Shea, really quick about the center rotation. I think Doc got fairly excited on against the Thunder, I believe, where he's talking about Boban and talking about Boban needing to play every game and showing enough that shows he demands minutes. And then, of course, he played Boban a bit against a team like the Rockets with a Capella type and Harden's adept nature at finding him in pick and rolls, and Boban really didn't fit. So Boban is still just that same, you know, real matchup-based center that we think he is, right? He's not a day-to-day center, I don't believe so. Have you changed your mind at all from Boban because of his strong showings those first two games? I feel like the Rockets game just kind of reinforced that. He's just, you can play him against centers that are slow. Even Steven Adams to an extent, but you can't really play him against a Clint Capella type. What do you think about Boban?
No, I agree. I mean, I think if you mean every game as in, like, he can get a couple minutes every game just
right,
to feel
right.
it out, sure. Like, I think against
yeah.
the Rockets, he came in, he played 4 to 5 minutes. You know, those minutes didn't go horribly. He got a couple baskets, but
mm-hmm.
they were really denying him the ball well on offense, and on defense, he was just getting run all around the court. He looked tired. He wasn't getting the looks he did in the previous two games. I don't think he's truly an every-game player. There's nothing wrong with that. When he does
right.
play, he's the most valuable player on the Clippers when he actually, has the right, matchup. And nothing is really going to change that. I think teams that even try to match up with him instead of trying to play him off just fail. He's just unstoppable when he gets the ball deep in the post. It's honestly incredible to watch. And I hope he really does get opportunities, but I think the Rockets game was a pretty good indicator that Doc will recognize that, against some teams, some games, it's just not Boban time. And that'll always be a little bit sad because Boban doing his thing is one of, like, the most magical things in the NBA, as I'm sure all of Twitter can agree. But it's just – I don't think it's an every game thing. I do think he looks a little bit more limber on defense, but I just don't think it's enough.
Yeah, nice to see Luke torch Carmelo Anthony, by the way, and just like kind of take it to him a couple of times. Carmelo Anthony is so bad. It's incredible how bad he's become. Maybe he's going to find his niche on the Rockets, but holy crap, he was so slow defensively yesterday and just not aggressive offensively. Yeesh. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander like made a mockery of Melo a couple of times. Made
yep.
a mockery of Harden. went to like pure arrogance, had a right-handed scoop. I think it was against Harden. And then went to a left-hand scoop that totally missed the mark. But like there was
yeah.
so much swagger on his game yesterday. He had that one awesome back pass to Tobias on the cut. He had
mm-hmm.
he completely torched Melo. He had those layups. He had a behind the back pass, so he was like going out of bounds after he like dropped a defender. I think it was maybe James Ennis or someone. Shea looks so good. I'm so excited for him. He's just such an exciting player, and I feel like he knows
yep.
it. He kind of feels the weight of expectation, and it's just kind of going at it. He has so much style. He has so much composure at the same time. What do you think about Shea? There's so much to talk about with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could dedicate an entire podcast to Shea. I think he's the best Clippers prospect since Blake Griffin. I don't think it's particularly close.
No.
I liked Al-Farouq Aminu and Eric Bledsoe, their rookie years. I think both of them have had, they both have had very good NBA careers in their different
mm-hmm.
ways. But Shea looks like a better rookie than either of them. He looks like a better long-term prospect than either of them. He's incredibly exciting just because he's already good and you can already see so many ways that he can get better. I think, you could tell like that exact play you mentioned where he went with that really tough left-handed layup against,
mm-hmm.
I think Capella was at the rim. That was just like an impossible shot. Like, I don't know if there's like five guys in the NBA who could have actually made that play.
Right.
Like, Steph, Kyrie, that literally might be it. that was a ridiculously hard shot.
Yeah,
and
seriously.
I wasn't expecting him to make it. It wasn't a shot he should have taken. Like, he was feeling himself and he took it. And I like
yeah.
to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not a great shot. So, it's stuff like that where – he'll learn sometimes the limits of what he can do against NBA caliber competition. He'll learn that, Clint Capella is massive and really
right.
good on defense. And you don't try like these weak left-handed layups against him when he's right there. But I mean, I think you could see stuff like that, which are just, that's really just rookie plays. He's not used to the speed and athleticism and size of the NBA yet. That's fine. I think there are times where he should shoot when teams go under on him, but he doesn't. But, I mean, I really like his defense is incredible for a rookie. He just snakes around picks and screens so easily. He stays with his man. He doesn't foul, which for a rookie is incredible. Like, I think Sendarius Thornwell and Juwan Evans, for rookies, both played pretty solid defense last year, but they fouled a lot, like most rookies do, and Shea just does not foul. You know, he was on Harden a lot yesterday, and, you know, he didn't play perfect defense, of course, but he played pretty good defense, and he didn't foul him. I don't think he fouled Harden once.
I don't think so.
He had a couple nice pokeaways when Harden was driving where he didn't foul him, which is incredibly hard to do. You know, his passing is really underrated, I think. He's a very, very good passer. You mentioned the back pass, the no-look he had to Tobias for the cutting dunk. He also had one where it didn't end up in a basket, but where somebody closed out hard, and he made the guy fall over, and then he did a behind-the-back pass to Harris.
Yeah, was
three.
It Ennis? I'm trying to remember who he dropped.
And I think it might have been Ennis.
Yeah.
But, like, he's a really good passer. I think in the Clippers' first game against the Nuggets, he made some beautiful passes that they also missed. So, you know, I think he's just been really good. He's a great finisher. He's a very nice ball handler. He runs the pick and roll well. And just the level of composure and calm he has and just ability to make the right decisions is just not – it's not something you can learn. You know, you can get better at it, but he's a natural. And, you know, I think there's just – that just about says it. He's just like a natural point guard. You know, will he be Chris Paul point guard? No. But, you know, Chris Paul is also one of, like, the 30 best basketball players of all time probably. Or you could make a case he's up there, and Shea to look as good as he has, you know, be the best point guard just in terms of pure point guard skills on the team already with guys who are many year NBA vets and have really accomplished a fair amount in NBA. It's just super impressive. You know, obviously the rookie wall might hit at some point. Again, there are things he can work on. He needs to bulk up, both for finishing and for guarding bigger guys on defense. But his length, his quickness, his smarts, it's great to watch. I mean, I think he's probably been the Clippers' third best player through their first three games after Tobias and Gallo. I mean, I can't think of anybody who's been better than him.
He's been so good. I'm going to buy his jersey. I'm pretty excited. I'm really excited about Shea, how good he's going to be. His potential. He's super, super exciting. And saying he's a better prospect than Bledsoe is like no small feat. Bledsoe was extremely hyped as a Clipper, particularly Bledsoe's defense was insane as a Clipper. And he hasn't sniffed anywhere close to that since he left. And Bledsoe, you know, Bledsoe averaged 25-5 with the Suns at the time. I want to say along those lines with a couple of steals, he was a fantasy basketball monster. Of course, he could never really stay healthy, but Bledsoe was a serious prospect. And, you know, I think the Suns had a choice between Bledsoe and Dragic and Isaiah Thomas there, and they picked Bledsoe. And at the time, it made sense. And of course, Isaiah Thomas had a great mini run with the Celtics, where he was an MVP candidate, and Dragic has just been such a steady backbone wherever he's gone. So them to have picked Bledsoe, he was nothing to sneeze at when he was a Clipper. And to say that Shea is probably a better prospect than Bledsoe is really saying something. He's been so great to watch. And even against the Thunder, he didn't put up numbers, but he has such great composure. It feels like he's never shaken. He's just awesome. I'm super excited to see his development.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can just cut Avery Bradley because he's just worthless. Anyway, do we have anything going on Twitter?
Yeah, we have a fair amount of responses, actually. So the first is from my guy, Ben Thrifty. Do you want Thornwell back in the rotation? Ideally, I think he would be getting minutes. You know, again, this is something we talked about a lot over the summer is, you know, I would prefer for these young guys to be getting minutes. That means Jerome Robinson, which there are questions about him, Thornwell, Ty Wallace. But right now there just aren't minutes, you know, unless you think Doc will go so far as to not just bench, but like not play Avery Bradley. I just don't see minutes happening as long as the Clippers are healthy. I mean, Luke, after a real rough game against the Nuggets where he just looked dreadful on offense, has been really, really good the past two games. Like, he looks as good as he did with the Rockets most of last year, which was very good. His defense looks incredible. He's made some really nice drives off closeouts and some very nice passes. He's been really good. Like, you're not playing Sindarius Thornwell over a healthy Luke Mbamute. I mean, it's just not going to happen if you're trying to win games. So do I want him back in an ideal world? Yes. But with the roster the Clippers have right now, I don't see it happening unless there are injuries. Like, he's not getting minutes over Lou or Bradley at shooting guard. He's not getting minutes over Tobias or Luke or Gallo at the three unless they start going really, really small and phase out Nick Scott and don't play Gortat as much even and go, like, small with Harrell and Gallo a lot, which would open up some more minutes at, like, small forward and power forward. Like, I just don't see it for Thornwell. And what do you think? I know you're a big Thornwell guy.
Yeah, I love Thornwell, but how can you – it's hard to say where he could go in this rotation. Like you said, Luke is clearly better than him. Mike Scott, you know, he's been pretty trash since he's been a Clipper. He finally hit a shot against the Rockets. That was nice. He's still a floor spacer, and he does have some value as that, and he's a bigger body. So – really, I mean, you would think phasing out Scott, and of course Avery Bradley won't be benched, whatever he is, and he's not been a very good offensive force. He's pretty much like a proven version of Sindarius Thornwell with his defense. So it's hard to really say that Thornwell should be out there in front of Bradley. Scott, you can understand phasing out a bit, but Scott's ability to space the floor is valuable, so it's hard for me to even say to play him over Mike Scott, maybe if you really wanted to get crafty. But if you play Scott, if you play Thornwell and Luke and Harrell together, you're going to be able to pass. And Shea is pretty good. And he has a jumper, but he's probably not completely confident in his three-pointer just yet. He's going to pack the paint pretty hard if you don't have a spacer like Scott out there instead of Thornwell. It's going to make things pretty difficult offensively for that unit. So as much as I'd love to see Thornwell in there, without an injury, it's hard to really argue for him to be in the rotation.
Yeah, I agree. You know, him, I think Ty Wallace is honestly, I'd rather see Wallace in even over Thornwell. Because I think Wallace was better last year, and I think there's a bit more room for him, his type of game, in terms of shot creation and attacking the basket. But I mean, he hasn't played either. So the next two questions are from James and Matt Chong on Twitter. They're very similar. James is, how long do you think Doc persists with Avery Bradley? And Matt Chong says, after three games now, what's your over-under before Shea replaces Avery in the first unit? If it were me, it would be now.
Now.
it would be Shea starting and getting 30 minutes a game literally tomorrow. He's that good. He's that important. He needs to be getting big minutes right away, not just because they're developmental, but because it gives the Clippers the best chance to win. He's very good. I feel like we could just talk about Shea. Like, every conversation just eventually leads back to Shea. But I mean, this is what happens when you have exciting rookies, which, I mean, for the Clippers has been, I mean, Thornwell and Evans were nice last year, but I mean, the Clippers have not had a legit, like, exciting, like, breakout. Guys are talking about them as, like, rookie of the year potential since Bledsoe. And Aminu that year. And it's like, that's a long time. And that's because they were really good in that time, because they were, you know, 50-plus win teams, so they weren't getting lottery picks. But, you know, it's hard not to talk about Shea, just because, I mean, he's the most important player on the team long term. Maybe Tobias Harris, but I think it's Shea. So I think he should start over Avery Bradley, like, tomorrow. How long do I think Docker will sit, like, the over-under? I mean, Shea is closing games over him. So it could be Doc acknowledges that Shea is better and plays some more minutes, but just wants to set, you know, a veteran defensive presence right away with Bradley and Beverly. That's possible. So if you go with that line of view, I mean, this might last for months. If you just think Doc will be like, Shea and Beverly is my best unit to start the game, I'm just going to start with them to hell with like setting a tone or whatever. It could happen, I think, pretty soon, because I think just the amount of minutes Shea's gotten and the, you know, the type of minutes he's gotten in very important situations is just, you know, you see how much Doc trusts him. And I know Rex Kalamian apparently had to talk him into keeping Shea in the game, but he did so. And then he looked smart for doing so because Shea played well and the Clippers won. So, I mean, I can't really say I don't really have an estimate. I mean, I'd say if I push came to absolute shove, maybe like a month before Shea steps in, but I really can't say. It's very hard to tell at this point.
Yeah, Shea should have started like yesterday. I'm already kind of stunned that Doc did play Shea down the stretch over Bradley, guarding James Harden, and like you said, had to be kind of convinced, and he mentioned in that post-game presser that he had to be kind of convinced about it, which is great that he could be convinced. So that's already a step in the right direction. I would imagine, I still kind of think Bradley holds the starting spot until maybe near December, unfortunately. But Shea just gets high 20s and gets more minutes fairly consistently over Bradley. And I'm okay with that. If that ends up happening, like, that's okay. But I feel like Bradley will have the starting position, quote unquote, like, for the foreseeable future, unfortunately. Yeah,
I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't, like, I think I was talking about on Twitter yesterday, it's not the worst thing in the world that Avery Bradley's getting 20 minutes a game. Like, mm-hmm. You know, he's generally, you know, competent, and his defense is legit good on ball. Yeah, I mean, the starting and closing games should not really be him. Shea is just better, I think. And honestly, he played better defense on Harden than Bradley did. You know, some of that is just due to size. Bradley is smaller. But, I mean, that's just – Bradley can't do anything about that, and Shea's just bigger. He's taller and longer. And, you know, mm-hmm. even if he's technically less defensively skilled or smart or not quite as – you know, obviously not as experienced as Bradley, he just has natural gifts that Bradley doesn't. Yeah, I mean, I think – as long as Shea's getting mid to high 20s and playing, like, important minutes down the stretch of games, I'm fine. You know, I would prefer him to start. I think the Clippers would be better with him starting. But as long as he gets his minutes and plays important minutes, I'm fine with Bradley getting the token start. It's fine. Next question is from Andres at Andrew from 5-7. If Gallo continues to kill it, do you think Tibbs would pull the trigger on Gallo and Beverly for Butler? Would you want this? No, I don't think he does that. Yes, I would want that. You know, as good as Gallo looks, you know, he's played very well. He's still a huge injury risk. He's just not nearly as good as Jimmy Butler. That's no slight to Gallo. Gallo is very good. Jimmy Butler's, like, at the worst, a top 15 player. And, I mean, the Wolves are actually winning games somehow, and a lot of that is probably because Butler's playing really well. Even though he didn't work out at all, you know, with the team or practice or anything, like, his sheer talent is enough to get them wins. Like, they beat Indiana today. And, yeah, he had 20 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, you know, and obviously plays good defense. Like, you know, he's really good. So, yeah, I mean, if the Wolves were like, we'll trade Beverly and, you know, we'll take Beverly and Gallo for Butler, yeah, you jump on that. But will they? No, I don't think there's a chance. Tibbs take the deal that bad.
Yeah, no way. Can we get Kawhi Leonard, though, please? Like, I love Kawhi Leonard so much. Just watching him play basketball. It is. If we can get Kawhi Leonard, man, I don't care for whatever. Give anybody except for Shea and Tobias, if possible. Even give Tobias. I don't care. Kawhi Leonard is so good.
Yeah, he
is so good. Watching him play again, it just reminds me how much I love Kawhi Leonard. You know, as dirty as he did the Spurs last year, he is so good. If we can do to get him, I hope we can get him, because I love Butler, Butler is just a means to Kawhi. If we can get whatever we can do to get Kawhi, get that dude. If he legitimately wants to come here, I am all in on any sort of Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes. I don't even – Butler is good. He's obviously fringe top 15 player. He's super good. But I'm just not all in on him like I am on Kawhi. Butler just has a ton of mileage. He does seem like he's a bit of a locker room drama queen. Well, I think he's super good, but then I also think that those last few years of his contract will not look the prettiest on our salary cap versus Kawhi Leonard, who's just a freaking superstar. So, yeah, I mean, really more than anything, looking around the league, Jimmy Butler would be a nice addition, but Kawhi Leonard is the number one target, and I hope the Clippers – I think the Clippers still know as much, and they'll be making – they'll be doing their due diligence. He is so good. Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I think the buzz is building up from very reliable sources. And I will say something that I've said – I will say – I'm pretty sure I've said it on here before. I've said it in comments on Clips Nation before. I've said it on Twitter. The reason why we don't have new Kawhi Leonard stuff for every little rumor is that, one, like, I just think that it's like aggregation, you know. I don't want to do too much of that. You know, sometimes if it's really big news or if it's like a legit trade rumor, you know, I'm fine with that. But just little nuggets here and there, like, don't be surprised to see Kawhi in a Clippers uniform. Or, you know, Woj said, I think it was like, the Clippers have a better chance than not at getting
him.
Like, what does that even mean? you know, I mean, it's insane to think about, but like, how do you write a story about that? It would literally be Woj's quote and then just like three lines of, this is really good. This matches everything else we've heard, that Kawhi loves LA and he likes the Clippers. And yeah, I mean, there's not that much to talk about unless there's like a substantive article or rumor or something. It's just hard to really generate much content on it that's not just basically clickbait and aggregation. That's why there's not more of it on Clips Nation. I think as the year goes along and as, you know, the summer gets closer and that kind of stuff heats up, hopefully we start seeing like actual real tangible news and rumors. Right now it's just entirely like, you know, from what we've heard around the league, you know, 50% of executives think, and like, how useful is that? But yeah, I mean, I think Butler, you know, I think one of the things Lee Jenkins could help with is, you know, he knows a lot of these players. He has ins with a lot of families and stuff. You know, if they get rumors that they think Kawhi wants to play with Jimmy Butler, or that if they landed Butler that he'd be more willing to sign there, then I think they might add more assets to a Butler deal.
Right.
But until we get that, I don't see it happening.
Right.
So, yeah, I think this is the last – oh, there are two more questions. So one is from a common question asker, Big Ben at Step Back Tree. Do you see Milos being placed back into the rotation once he's healthy? If so, what will his role be? No.
Yeah, Milos is done.
Really, I don't think he's done necessarily. I just don't – like, there's no room for him. Like, if you assume that you know, Shea's going to get his minutes. Pat Beverly's going to get his minutes. Lou's going to get his minutes. It would, again, it would take Avery Bradley being completely benched for him to get a spot in the rotation or injured. And I don't see that happening. Like, I think he is healthy now. Like, the Clippers have talked about how he's getting better from a hamstring. I think his conditioning probably does need to be better. But really what it sounds like to me is, like, he just doesn't have a spot. The Clippers have a full guard rotation. You know, their guys already need more minutes. Like, if you look at just a regular team, Shea and Lou and Beverly should be getting more minutes than they are already. So, like, I don't think there's room for him. And I don't necessarily think it's that he's done or that he's still injured. But it's just there's no place for him. And I'm not sure if nobody wanted to trade for him because they think he's done or just doesn't have any use or he can't get healthy. But I'm surprised they didn't try to get an asset for him because, you know, I guess the thing is, like, he's a great guy to have who, if Beverly or Shea or Lou gets injured, you can plug him in 15, 20 minutes. He'll be really good on offense and he'll take the hits on defense. But you'd think like you could get like a couple second round picks for him or something, and that would just be better. But no, I don't think he's gonna be back in the rotation if the team is healthy.
Yeah, that's all I want. I just want a second rounder for him. I don't think Milos is done, meaning he can't play, but there's just no space for him on this team, unfortunately, unless there's an injury to Shea or to Beverly or to one of our primary handlers. But otherwise, like, he was a lot of fun last year, but there's just not space for him anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And then the final question is from my dad, always with the questions. why not some minutes for Robinson? Same thing. This is a little trickier, I think, because like they literally just invested a lottery pick in this guy. And there are not many lottery picks, I would imagine, who are not Euro stash players, who did not play coaches' decisions for the first three games of their career. In recent years, anyway. I mean, I think if you look back over the last 4 or 5 years, there are probably only a couple who fit that mold, and none of them turned out very well. Like, I get the Clippers are a unique situation, but, you know, I think at some point they need to try to get Robinson minutes, even if it's just situational stuff, like, you know, for free throws shooting or for some out-of-timeout, you know, three-point shot or something or other. You know, you just spent the 13th pick in the draft in a really good draft class on this guy. And, like, you know, I understand you have a G League team and you can get him to play minutes there against competition that's much better than he saw in college and get him involved in the system and how the Clippers work and everything. But, like, he's the 13th pick. It's a little worrying that he hasn't gotten minutes. I mean, what do you think about that? It's something that I think a lot of people were talking about on Twitter yesterday when he didn't get minutes again. I mean, do you think it's unusual? I mean, I think it's probably smart they don't give him minutes. I just don't think it looks particularly good.
I wish we could give all of Avery's minutes to Robinson. Like, in an ideal world, it would be nice to develop him. I do think Robinson can be good. I understand not playing him right now. Again, there's not that much space for him. Bradley is still clearly a plus defender, so he still has usefulness in that way. But I feel like Robinson would be a really fun kind of player to play alongside a Beverly or even a Shea, where he's just running off of screens and trying to drag the defense. He would have value on this team. Unfortunately, there's just so many guards. It's tough. It's tough to really argue for him to have a consistent role in the team, but I completely understand people being critical about the idea that he's wasting away and he's a lottery pick. He should be getting minutes. You know, I guess he's going to have to get minutes in the G League, but it sucks. You know, I think we're all rooting for him, but this is just the cards he's been dealt.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about this so many times, and you don't want to beat a dead horse, but, like, it's so puzzling to me that they brought back Milos and Avery Bradley. You know, at this point, Milos doesn't even really matter because he's not in the rotation. But just bringing both those guys back when you know you invested 2 lottery picks in guards, I still don't understand it. I mean, I think maybe they thought the trade market would be a little bit hotter for those guys, or, I mean, Avery's place will be than it is. But, like, you know, there's still this people who have seen think that they can get a first-round pick for Avery Bradley. Unless he gets much better than he has been, there is not a chance in the world they get a first round pick for him. A second and a regular unprotected second, sure. But, like, more than that, like, I don't think they even get 2 seconds for him, or a second and like a fringe prospect. I don't know. I mean, he just has not been very good, and like he's expensive. He's not old, but he's not particularly young either. Like, I just don't know what team at the deadline would be. Like, you know, Avery Bradley's the guy we're going to give up a real asset for to help us win. Like, I can't think of the team. And, you know, it's just, it is very frustrating, you know, because I don't think most Clippers fans were huge, you know, were really that in love with the Robinson pick. I think a lot of them turned around very quickly once they saw some of his highlight reels on YouTube at BC. And I think he's legit shown in preseason summer league, like, he can shoot from the NBA distance. Like, he has a very nice, clean shot. And he has the size to be able to play shooting guard in the NBA, but he doesn't have room for minutes. And I think the Clippers throwing him into minutes when probably not ready for them would be unwise. So,
right.
I mean, I think they're doing the right thing. Like, you don't want to play a guy who's not ready and then just murder his confidence. It's something that happens all the time in the NFL with rookie quarterbacks, and some of them just never recover. I mean, you never know how they could have been. Maybe they're just bad. But, you know, you don't want to kill a guy's confidence if they're not ready. So, you know, I'm going to trust Doc here and just say, you know, Robinson probably isn't ready for minutes, but it really does not look good. And, you know, I do think he should play in the G League. Like, if he's not going to play in the NBA, if the Clippers are healthy, it doesn't look great for them to send their lottery pick to the G League, but they should do it. Like, he needs development.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's about it. That's it for my feelings on Jerome.
That's how I feel, too,
you know,
pretty much.
Yeah, we haven't seen him play yet, so we don't really have anything that could be like, he needs to do this or he needs to be better at this. Like, we don't know, because he literally hasn't played a minute. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that'll do it for this episode of Lob the Gem, the podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. For Rob, I'm Siobhan, and as always, go Clippers!